welcome to Michigan HockeyCast John 316. It's tournament time. Here we go. You can't laugh during my thing. Take your microphone off. Alex,
yes.
It is Tuesday, not Monday. So we're going to record on a Tuesday, not a Monday. Do you know why?
No. Just playing along for the audience here.
You just showed up a day later, and all of a sudden everything was ready to go. Yesterday was Craig Ross's birthday.
How old is he now? Or is that embargo?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I might be under an NDA. So, but it's not like few. We'll go with that. So normally we would have recorded on a Monday, but it's a Tuesday because of Craig Ross's birthday. And because of Craig Ross's birthday, I thought that we should try to tell a Craig story or give homage to him because he is an intimate part of this hockey cast, I should say. So I wanted to say that to tell one of my favorite Craig stories, which was I got to know Craig a couple of years ago, and obviously he's so great with technology that he doesn't believe cell phones actually exist. So the best way to get a hold of him is via email. And so he would be like, oh, just send me an email. Okay, fine. So we would email, and then we started emailing about basketball or about football recruiting or whatever, and getting to just kind of interact that way for a while. Well, Craig used to go to Hawaii. He still does sometimes, but he has a place in Hawaii, and he goes to Hawaii. So that's becomes the only way to communicate with him. And again, with the technology thing, you know, he's not the greatest with where his fingers go and typing and all that sort of stuff. So he always signs all of his emails CR. And I think that's even his pseudonym on MGoBlog and other places. But I get an email from him that is now signed $R. And I was like, what is that? And then I realized that he was just holding down the shift key as he was typing and signed it $R instead of CR, which is just perfect because if you've known Craig at all or heard him talk, which I'm sure everyone has at some point, he is, I would not describe him as like very urban or with it or that sort of like catchy, cool vibe that he has. So for him to get the nickname of $R, which took off when I told his wife, because now we'll be talking to Mila and she'll be like, oh yeah, C Money's doing this. And so now he's known in smaller circles, but maybe this will take off on a wider scale of C Money R or C Money, if you will. Do you have a great Craig Ross story, or do you want to describe the sweetest goal in the NHL this weekend?
I can probably do that. I will say that there are a lot of goals that sometimes get overblown or people talk about them too much or whatever it may be, but the
like the Mike Legg goal, has that been played out?
It was cool at the time, but now everyone does it, so now it's not cool anymore. Kind of like the Forsberg move in the shootout.
What about the Wahlstrom when he was 9 penalty shot?
I don't know that one.
You remember that? He picked up, he comes in well, it was a penalty shot, so it's a breakaway, and he picks up the puck like the Mike Legg thing, but does a 360 and whips the puck through and scores, and the goalie had no idea that he was even shooting it and turned around and the puck was in the net. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. The Matt Barzal goal from Saturday, where he scores between the legs, but he does it off the rush while shouldering off Rasmus Ristolainen, is really one of the best goals I've ever seen. Maybe the best. I mean, it's just wild. Like,
and it wasn't like planned, right? Like it's not like when you're in on a breakaway in basketball and you like, all right, I'm gonna cross my legs and do a 360 dunk,
yeah.
Right? Like this is just how it played out.
He just does it at such high speed that it's just crazy to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the skill needed to go between the legs is a skill level that most NHL players have. But, you know Matt Barzal, and with his speed, to do it at high speed is a little more impressive. And then you know, then you throw in the component of the defender shouldering off the defender, and then to stick the landing and actually score. It's just wild.
And he didn't even go five hole, right? Like, he went back behind the goalie, so the goalie's coming with him as they both cross the crease. And so it's not like he just slides it under the goalie, but he reaches back and goes behind. The goalie has already slid and past where the puck's going
to
go.
Yeah. It just crazy to watch. That's what I can say about it. And, I mean, I guess you could say it's a good metaphor for the Buffalo Sabres season or past decade.
What about when the next day, I think it was Sunday afternoon, when Taylor Hall's in on a breakaway, hits the blue line and just falls over? I feel like that's a little more apropos for the Sabres. Anyway, this is a great transition. Was it better than the KJ goal on Friday night?
Yes.
Okay. But that was close. That was pretty impressive.
It was a pretty good goal.
The backhander. We will get to that in a second. So Michigan plays Minnesota in a series in Minneapolis, which up until a few years ago was more or less a series loss or just a game loss. You're like, well, that's going to be two L's. But in the last few times that they've visited Mariucci, they've actually played well and gotten a sweep, I think, a couple of years ago, and played well in last year, 2 years ago.
Last year, they got a sort of sweep.
A sort of sweep. They got a legitimate
shootout loss, and then, shootout win, and then an actual win.
It's not the house of horrors that it used to be years ago, and Michigan ended up getting a split, which, you know, we've talked about splits virtually all winter now, and they've been disappointing a lot of the times. But this one, I think, had sort of a different feel to it, where it was, you know, I wasn't expecting them to go in and win both games. I mean, Minnesota's a top three team. Michigan's probably a few spots below that, at least. And I wanted them to get a win, and I wanted them to look like they belonged on the ice. And I think they accomplished that.
It was very much, you just needed one win to lock up your number three seed in the Big Ten tournament. And obviously, Minnesota came in needing the sweep with their backs to the wall. I mean, they controlled their own destiny, but they're
to win the conference.
To win the conference regular season title, and their, you know, path was harder than Wisconsin's, obviously, so they had a lot of pressure, and in the end, you know, Michigan was the team that got what they wanted. They got their one win. Minnesota didn't get their sweep, and, you know, Michigan definitely is more satisfied.
Friday ended well, but it didn't necessarily look like it was going to start very well, because within the first 3-4 minutes of the game, Michigan takes two penalties, including two overlapping.
Yeah, they overlap by about, 40 seconds, maybe?
Right, so they're killing a 5-on-3, and we're not even 4 minutes into the game, and this is about to go south in a hurry, because, I mean, Minnesota has a decent power play. They'd been struggling at the time, but they have guys that can score goals, and they move the puck well, and Michigan kills it, and actually, I should say Strauss Mann kills it, as he had a number of saves in the early going that really kept Michigan into it. Speaking of Strauss Mann, he's playing. It looks like Michigan has gone to him now. We've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, but it looks like maybe they've pulled the trigger.
It all went according to plan.
to the AJD plan?
You know, Mann and Portillo, they did their little trade-off there for a little while, and we got Portillo experience. I think the team benefited from it, but Strauss Mann's going to be the guy, and yeah, I think that was pretty predictable, and now you're into a period where with Minnesota this weekend, and then moving forward, you need to win all these games, right? There's really no games you can afford to lose, so now you need to go with your best guys, and you know, I don't really know who's the better goaltender, really, but Mann's got the experience, and that's what matters.
He's also wearing the C. I mean, he's as much a leader on this team as anyone, I would guess, and he really proved that early on, making, I would say, 3 to 4 saves that were very, very good, needed saves early to keep the score 0-0, as Michigan really did not have a great first period. I believe they were outshot 15-5 or something of that sort.
Well, it was like the middle 9-ish minutes were pretty strong. Play mellowed out, but you had that really rough beginning with a couple penalties, and then that last 3 or 4 minutes was also pretty bad there.
Yeah, they were hanging on. In between, like you were talking about, though, they do get a goal.
They get two power plays. And it was kind of classic puck luck in the sense that the first power play, they move it around really well. and Ciccolini rings it off the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get another power play where it only takes about 8 seconds, and you know, it's they score a goal, but it has nothing to do with good puck movement. It just literally bounces around, and everyone is fooled on where it is, and it's right on the doorstep, and Bortolo is easily, you know, easily able to just put it right in.
Yeah, I don't. Was it a shot or a pass? I don't remember. I'm not even sure.
It was bouncing around, and then
it hit two Gophers, I think.
Yeah, and he was just like, "Well, thank you."
And Bortolo is sitting there right on the doorstep, yep, and finishes it for 1-0. And you know, when that happened, it was like this sigh of relief because you get these two penalties or power plays that you don't convert on. You know, Minnesota's come out and they're out shooting you at the time by almost 10. And to be able to walk out of that period up 1-0 was, I thought, huge for the weekend. I mean, because at this point, you don't know what the next two periods are going to be like. And it's, you know, we're getting kind of manhandled at the time. But going into the second period, then Michigan takes a penalty and you know, they have to kill it off, which I believe that they do relatively easily. And it was, I think, right after this penalty where Michigan's kill is sort of stranded on the ice and they can't really get their change. And it's the long change because it's the second period and the puck stays in their zone and it just gets kind of sloppy, sort of not exactly like the Bortolo goal early, but just guys aren't moving their feet as well because they've been out there too long. And you get a shot from kind of the slot that, you know, man has already made a save. Guys are trying to block shots and the puck goes in the net to tie it at one. And that kind of became a theme throughout the weekend is Minnesota wouldn't necessarily always score on the power play, but they would kind of tire out Michigan's defenses and then be able to take advantage afterwards.
Yeah, but I think the big story of the second period was how quickly Michigan, you know, was able to get right back offensively.
To respond to that?
Yeah, they took the punch, but were able to keep standing and really going at it.
And that's what we referenced in the very beginning was the KJ goal, which the puck gets down low to him, and he has his back to the goalie, and he takes just a backhand and just roofs it high over LaFontaine. And it was, I mean, he just seems to have a flair for the dramatic. Like, his goals, sort of his passes, the things that he does, I think at some point we called him like a human highlight reel.
He definitely does everything for maximum highlight effect, which has its upsides and its downsides, which we've talked about at times, and certainly when we wrap up the season, we'll probably discuss more in detail about different ways he plays, but it can have its benefits, and this was a very flashy goal. I mean, they needed a goal, period, but this was a particularly spectacular one. Kind of reminded me of Todd Bertuzzi's old spinorama move in the shutouts he used to, in the shootouts that he used to do before. The NHL banned that, which...
What, like spinning in a circle?
You can't come in a shootout and then bring to a stop and then do the spinorama thing that he used to do.
Well, the puck always has to be moving forward, right?
Yeah, you can't do... So, because it wasn't just like a simple backhand. Like, Johnson did it in a sort of a spinning motion where it was just all one, like, whoosh,
yeah,
and it was in the, you know...
But it's not just like he got a backhand, but he roofed it.
Yeah.
Because LaFontaine had the lower part, yeah, and he got it up in the air from a very short distance.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like from, you know, 8 feet away where you can have a slow riser. I mean, he got the puck high, like, up into the roof, which was probably one of the more impressive slash highlight reel goals of the year, I would say.
Yep.
So Michigan has a 2-0 lead, and or 2-1 lead, I should say. And then, like, they almost break the game open a few times. You have Bortolo to Brisson have a sort of a back and forth where LaFontaine has to make a really big save.
Yep.
And then Beniers had a shot that I think went off of LaFontaine and then off of one of the either the post or the bar. It looked like that was going in, and Michigan kind of gets a little unlucky there, and the puck stays out. But then at the end of the period, they get... Minnesota gets all their guys trapped on one side of the ice, and the puck is reversed on a kind of a nice pass from Beniers for someone to get their first goal of the year on, it looked like a slap shot from the dot.
It was a little higher than the dot, but...
Was it?
It was closer to the blue line.
Okay.
But, yeah, Minnesota all just kind of got to one side, and LaFontaine was especially on one side of the net, And when they got it back to Beniers at the left point, and I saw Summers wide open at the right, I was watching with my brother, and I said out loud, like, get it to Summers! Get it to Summers!
which is kind of what everyone feels in late spring anyway.
And, you know, they slide it across to him, and LaFontaine, this was his one misplay of the weekend, where he peeks, he's got a screen in front of him, and rather than peeking to his left, which would have allowed him to then get over more quickly, he peeked to his right, and then that sort of, because he needed to slide to his left, he peeks to his right, then realizes, oh, I gotta slide to my left.
Yeah.
So he then has to reverse his body motion, he's just a little late getting across, and then it goes in.
Right, yeah, that shot from Summers is real nice. I mean, it was hard.
It was right inside the far post.
Exactly, and like you said, LaFontaine was, I think, caught on his wrong skate as he peeked out to the right and then just couldn't get across. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. We can touch on this a little bit, but, you know, this series was sort of built up, and they did that, I think, on the Gophers broadcast because we got the regional broadcast on Friday night.
With a very, very old color commentator.
Who was good.
Yeah, he was good.
He might have been one of the best color commentators we've had, which isn't saying, like, a ton this year, but he was...
He was the grandfather of... the nanny guy that played for them a couple years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think they said he was a third generation, like the patriarch of a three generation Gopher family or something.
But. And he really talked about, I think, KJ Beniers and Ciccolini that he really singled out. And I thought all those guys had really good games too. I mean, he seemed to not be just a Gopher homer.
No, he was pretty solid.
But it was kind of built up as a man versus LaFontaine weekend because obviously JLF used to play here for a couple of years, never really stuck. He had a couple chances to win the job, couldn't really do it, and then Michigan went with Levine and Mann came in and took that job.
We should note that, you know, LaFontaine losing his job at Michigan, I mean, just how much he's improved.
Yes. You know,
he was we're not going to here to really rag on Hayden Levine, but also Jack LaFontaine was not even close to as good as Hayden Levine was. And Hayden Levine was, for most of his Michigan career, not particularly great. So, like, LaFontaine has really, really improved. So
he has gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, he was a third round pick. So
yeah, he had talent.
There was something that was always there, and maybe he just needed a change of scenery. Maybe he needed,
to Minnesota. He went back to... I don't remember if it was what league it was he went to, but he went back to juniors and then he went to Minnesota.
But he stuck around, so he's in his fifth year, I guess.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, he looks good. I mean, I think this is one of those situations where you would say that it's really worked out well for both teams because he left, which opened the door for Mann to come in, and within a year, by the end of the year, Mann looked like he was going to be the guy.
Well, I mean, LaFontaine left after Hayden Levine took the team to the Frozen Four.
Right.
And they had Mann coming in, but, you know, that was the one brief moment of time where Levine looked like a guy. And then, you know, Mann came through. And so, you know, regardless, LaFontaine really didn't have a path just because Mann was coming in and because the guy he had lost the job to had taken the team deep in the tournament. So.
Right. Yes, that is true. So... it did make sense for him to probably go, and it worked out for him, and it ended up working out for Michigan because by the end of the next year, Mann had solidified himself, and then, of course, last year had a phenomenal year, and probably would have this year too, but, you know, when you get a drafted goalie, you can't shelve him the entire time, and they've split with Portillo, and Portillo's look good, and like you said, you're not even sure who the better goalie is, but Mann has the experience, and so... it was fun to see them kind of go head to head, and I thought that Mann was a little bit better on Friday night. And as we get into the third period, you know, we'll come across a goal that kind of says that. He did make he made a couple of good saves early on in the third, and then he probably had his highlight save maybe of the year when it's 3-1 Michigan and it's about halfway through, and there's a great cross. I think it went through the crease. Cross crease pass from Mann's left to his right, and Sampo Ranta is on the receiving end, who's probably Minnesota's best player. Looks like he's going to be an NHL player. Takes a shot on the one timer, and Mann gets across and gets like his stick handle in the way and just deflects it high. And that was probably as maybe it's a little lucky, but like he was there, like he got his stick across and made probably the best save of the year.
Maybe. I mean, it was definitely a really nice save, and the broadcasters thought it was in.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out where the puck went, because when you looked at it, you're like, well, that's in the net, but it wasn't, obviously, and it was that kind of a save. Pretty soon after that, though, Ranta picks a corner on him, and it's 3-2. Ranta showed, I think, all weekend why he's a pretty good player, and Michigan may see him next week, or maybe even hopefully in a couple of weeks again. But he kind of shakes a defender a little bit, and then Mann has his post covered, and Ranta just picks the top right corner, and it's 3-2. And this is kind of a situation where, you know, the game isn't quite over yet because there's about 8 minutes left, and it's one of those situations that you get really nervous because, okay, you're up 3-1, the game is decently in hand, but now you have to finish it, and Michigan's been in a couple of these situations, and it was, okay, can they hold this out? And instead of sort of sitting back and trying to, you know, defend a siege, more or less, they went and attacked. And this is sort of the goal that we were referencing earlier. But Beniers comes down the left side and takes a shot that hit. I couldn't tell if it
hit. I think it hit the far post.
I don't think
it hit him in the mask.
Okay. So it looks like it maybe hits LaFontaine, or it gets through him, hits the post, and comes right out in the slot. And Granowitz is sitting there, right place, right time, and slams home the rebound with about 4 minutes left, and it's 4-2. And at that point, I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I think it pretty much was. Scoring that goal was a lot like the Notre Dame game from late January, the second game of that series, where Michigan had a one-goal lead, and then I think it was Moyle that scored in that game, where Michigan hasn't been in a lot of close games where they're protecting a lead, but what we have seen in the last couple instances that they've gotten a chance to do it is that they, rather than sort of sitting back, they have...
Turtling.
Yeah, tried to go down and score the insurance goal to put the game away that way.
Yeah, and that's what they did in this situation. And then they defended really well after that, because Minnesota came on and tried to make it a game. And I thought the line of the weekend was from our color announcer for Minnesota, who said, you could throw a hula hoop around all five guys because they're all packed in the slot. And I thought it was a really well articulated statement there to not only describe the defense, but to bring a picture to your mind. And then just for some whipped cream and cherries, Beniers tallied a 200-foot, almost 200-foot empty netter, just shooting it all the way down and slamming the door, making it 5-2. And at that point, Michigan had gotten the win that they at least needed to get there to clinch their third place in the division and probably clinch a spot in the tournament.
Yep, and that, you know, pretty much got Michigan all they needed from the weekend.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the second game, and then we'll get into maybe a little bit of some Big Ten tournament, maybe some bracketology. We'll see how much time we have. But right now, let's take a break, and you can hear an ad.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Here we go. Here we go. One more time. Everybody's feeling fine. Here we go now.
Yes, yes, here we go. Rinsink has got the flow.
Put your head to the beat. We got everything you need. Here we go now.
Previously stated in the first segment, it is now Straussman's crease, and he started again on Saturday, not really surprisingly. What was sort of surprising is some of the other guys that started. I believe that Jake Heron started as a forward.
Yeah, I mean, didn't
was that injury related?
Didn't have much to play for, so might as well get weird.
Is that one of your life mottos? You don't have much to play for, so you might as well get weird. I feel like getting another win is a big deal. Maybe not in the Big Ten, but in the tournament. Like, aren't you playing for seeding? Or are you just you're just 100% on it doesn't matter who you play when you play them?
Seeding in the hockey tournament is irrelevant unless you're going to be the number one overall seed and you can get the Atlantic hockey team.
The Atlantic team, yeah. Okay, that's fair. Well, the first period was not like a firework fest, but it did start with a couple of matching 3-on-2s that neither team could convert on. Michigan did get a couple of early power plays, and it was looking more promising, I would say, than the previous nights. But they didn't really do a whole lot on either one. KJ had a wide shot that was maybe kind of close, and then in the second one, Brisson almost had Bortolo backdoor for a tap-in, and that was about it for those couple power plays. And then Power actually made one of the, I thought, his best moves of the year, where Michigan kind of has a 2-on-2. They come into the zone, and then it's sort of shut down, so the attackers sort of put on their brakes, and Power just comes flying out of nowhere down the left wing, and he gets hit with a pass, and he's essentially in alone and has a chance to take the lead, and LaFontaine makes a really big save. Because at that point, you know, if Minnesota gives up that goal after the previous night, and I think that they had only won one game before in the entire year when not scoring first, and so that was going to be a really big point in the game. And LaFontaine keeps it even. And so then Minnesota is able to come back down and score on another 3-on-2 because there were plenty of odd man rushes and transitions chances in this first period where Brodzinski is able to finish after a really well-executed 3-on-2.
Yeah, and, you know, again, just like in the Friday game, you know, Michigan gives up a goal, but then comes right back and gets another run. Sure, you know, gets one back right after it.
Yeah, pretty much as we're taking the notes and tweeting out what had happened, Blankenberg stepped in from, I think, a really nice, not only hold, but creation of space by Owen Power, who had a couple of nice moves in this game, where he has to get away from a defender, creates a little bit of space, gets it back to Blankenberg, who walks down to the top of the house, fires a shot, a really nice screen from Bortolo to seal off JLF, and he picks a corner.
Yep, and you know, after this game and that goal from Blankenberg got more of the internet scouts interested in Nick Blankenberg, and I do think he'll come back for a senior year, but I think at this point it's pretty clear that he'll get a tryout with an NHL team at some point.
So would it behoove him to maybe take a chance in this offseason, or does it make more
sense
for him to come back?
I think for him, you come back. I think Mann will be a much more interesting decision.
Ah, that is interesting. And Blankenberg,
because some guys that aren't drafted do leave early to sign contracts. Terrell Hirose did from Michigan State
right.
a couple
but
years
he,
ago.
I
but
mean,
he was in the Hobie conversation.
Right.
So.
He was scoring at an obscenely high rate. Blankenberg's probably the captain next year if he comes back,
yeah.
I would guess. Right?
I would think so, yes. I've thought that for a couple years now.
Right. So starting the second period, my first note is that you were already bored and that you talked about a lot of NHL-based upturned rakes.
What were the rakes about? I don't remember.
About different teams doing like certain things and they need to avoid these rakes because of like the situation in front of them. And you were like saying, okay, well, this team is going to do this unless this happens.
Well, the Flames just fired their coach, the second coach that the Ottawa Senators have slayed this year.
If you lose to Ottawa, it is so bad that now you're
got Claude Julien fired from Montreal, and then they got Jeff Ward fired from Calgary, which means Daryl Sutter is back in the saddle, once again proving that there are only 40 people in the world that are allowed to be NHL coaches, and they just rotate.
All right. We're going to move back to the game. I think from
hey, it's good news. Mel will never be poached from Michigan because he's not one of those 40 people who's eligible to be an NHL coach.
Did you think there was a time that he was going to be poached?
No, but there could be 5 years from now.
Do you think he can work his way into the top 40? Like if somebody like dies or something and there's a spot opening.
Probably not.
How do you think they choose that?
Have to play in the NHL for a while or do something to get into that rank.
Is there like hazing in order to like... become part of it?
Probably not, but maybe.
Okay. All right. Well, the first big thing that happened in the second period was another great LaFontaine save on a Ciccolini, I just wrote in capitals, bomb, because he wound up and took a slap shot from probably 8 to 10 feet away. And, I mean, you could hear that sucker go flying off of LaFontaine, but that was, like, as hard a shot as I've seen probably him take, and from the distance. I mean, he was going to put it on net. It was going to be really hard for him to hit the net, but a really big save by LaFontaine to keep it at that at an even game at that point. Michigan does take a penalty, and Minnesota has their power play, and this one is just another great shot. Minnesota had a few goals this weekend that there's just nothing Michigan could do, but Scott Reedy is on the left side and shoots from near the dot, and it like eludes two Michigan attempted blockers and then goes right into the corner above Strauss man. And I was trying to think of, is there anything that anyone could possibly do to stop this? And I thought, man, maybe you could like rush him and force the shot or try to get out on him, sort of like you would push like a three-point shooter or something. But like this was just one of those shots, like the Ranta goal from the night before of like, I mean, when a guy picks a corner, what can you do?
Not much. I mean, that was, you don't see that many shots like that in the college level, but it was a pretty darn good one.
Yeah, so it's 2-1, and then Michigan gets their third power play, and you had a comment on this one.
I had a friend text me that it was the worst power play he'd ever seen, and I think any power play that you see a shorthanded goal automatically becomes worse than that. Among power plays that did not result in a shorthanded goal, that might have been the worst.
I mean, did they get it in the zone?
I don't know, like, but Minnesota did.
Not controlling it, just getting the puck actually inside the opposing blue line?
I mean, it had to have been there for the opening faceoff of the power play, but...
But Minnesota had, what, two or three chances, I think, on a 4-on-5, and Michigan could barely get control of the puck anywhere on the ice. I think a minute went by, and I probably said to Craig, are we even going to touch the puck on this power play? But that was suboptimal. Michigan did get one more chance in the second period. They had kind of a weird 4-on-3 that was sort of late developing, and I think it was Brisson that got down the slot, but the puck ended up on his opposite hand and he couldn't get his stick over. There was sort of an open net for him to poke it into if he could have, but the puck just didn't bounce the right way. And then Minnesota responded with a 2-on-1. So it was kind of like an interesting... that kind of tends to happen though, right? When you get sort of an odd man rush and you get the right bounce off the boards or a big kick save, that it goes the other way.
Yeah.
And Minnesota missed their shot wide, but that was probably Michigan's best shot to tie the game at that point. In the third period, Michigan Nolan Moyle took kind of a silly penalty behind the net. I don't think they've taken as many bad penalties lately, and I don't think they've taken as many penalties. Like, I remember, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the year, Brendan Brisson had some issues taking penalties in the offensive zone or a lot of minor ones that you just kind of think you should clean up, and that hasn't really been an issue, I don't think, as much in the second half.
I think discipline's been better for the most part.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this was another situation where they didn't give up a goal on the power play, but the puck was in the zone forever, and as soon as the power play ended, they couldn't get a change, but Dakota Raby made actually very nice play on the power play to break up a pass going across the top of the house, and he has the puck sort of at his feet in his skates but in on his stick, and he just waits and waits and just can't get it clear, and the puck is moved around, it's reversed back, and the man kind of has his bobble of the night where the shot comes in from a sharper angle, but it goes off the post behind man and then hits his back skate. So he's going from right to left. It misses his left skate, hits off his right skate, which is his trailing skate, and then goes into the net for a 3-1 lead.
Well, so there are a few things here. Number one, my old buddy Nick Hornberg would always say that the power play is never over. The opponent's power play is never over until the first change after the power play has expired. And that was one of those instances where they didn't get the change. Raby's just trying to be too fancy. You know, in that situation where you've had the knife to your throat for a little while and your guys are really tired, when you have controlled possession like that, you just need to clear it.
Yep.
You know, there are times for controlled exits, and analytically controlled exits are better than dump outs, but there are some situations where you just need to be a little smarter, and that was one of the things that even before the goal, I was like, oh, man, you know,
yeah.
Just clear it.
Yeah.
And so you could just see it coming. It was one of those instances. And then the goal itself, I mean, I think it's on man, frankly. I don't know what he's doing there, but he's sliding across, but he's not in the butterfly for some reason. His left pad is vertical.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks like he's doing an odd, like, jump off the diving board. And as a result, because it's vertical, he leaves a huge portion of the net exposed. And,
yeah.
I mean, he's honestly lucky it required going off the post and in, because when you slow it down, there's a clear path to the net wide open.
Yeah.
And it hits the post, then goes off him and in. But I don't know what the story is. And when he slides across, he kind of, like, falls over.
Yeah, he was very awkward.
It was just like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
So, you know, just weird. And I think it was McLaughlin that scored, and after it went in, he was laughing.
Yes. Where he was like,
which is generally not a good sign when you're a goaltender.
Sure, I'll take that one. Thanks, bud. Yeah, at that point, it's 3-1. And
that was kind of like a, it's probably not happening.
Yeah, because Michigan just didn't have, like, I didn't think either team looked convincingly better than the other team all weekend. I thought that Michigan played a more complete game in all phases on Friday, and I thought it was the reverse on Saturday, where Michigan was a little bit sloppy, couldn't get their chance in transition to finish, they couldn't get a power play goal the way they had before, or the previous day. The goaltending was good, but it was you had that little sloppy area. They had a chance on the penalty kill also to get the clear at the end. They didn't. They're just these little things that they ended up paying for kind of all night. And Minnesota was pretty crisp and clean, I would say, most of the night. Unlike Friday, when they kind of were in that position where they had the chance early on to score on that 5-on-3. And then, you know, there was a couple of goals that were like, maybe something could have been done a little bit better on this one. But so it's 3-1, and you think it's kind of over, and then it isn't, because with a couple minutes left, you have a nice pass from Brisson, who, you know, we should take a second before we talk about this goal, but talk about he has really come on, I think, in the second half of the year. Not only he's scoring goals. Beniers, I think, is still leading the team, but he's being sort of a good finisher for, especially on the board, a low line. But he's also making nice passes, a few to exit the zone and a few to set up other players. I mean, have you noticed similar things from Brisson in that situation?
Yeah, I think that Brisson has definitely improved all around. I think he could use one more year in college.
Yes.
I think he could also go to the AHL if he wanted to. I think the transition could be a little tough, but regardless, he's made the adjustments that I think the Vegas Golden Knights would want to see from his development so far.
From the first half to the second half.
Especially in the first half when he was kind of just a trigger man.
Yeah.
But let's also not discount that, the first chunk of the year he was playing with Johnny Beecher, and then they switched things around, and I think playing with Borlo has suited him pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And in this case, we'll go back to that goal now. He's sitting on the wing, and Becker makes a nice move and cuts down the top of the house into the slot. And Brisson just puts it right on his stick. Becker makes a little bit of a move and finishes, and it's 3-2. And you're thinking, well, we're still only a couple minutes left. It's a long shot, but it's a shot at least, and they have a chance. And then, you know, with about maybe within the next minute or so, I think they pull the goalie, and they have six guys, and they get Granowitz alone about 3 feet in front of the crease with no one around him. The puck gets to him, and LaFontaine makes the save. And you're just like, come on. Like, this was the chance.
Yep.
You were only
going to get one chance.
Right, and that's what you wanted. Like, the whole thing was set up to get a situation like that, and he just couldn't bury it. And then within, you know, a few seconds, the puck is cleared from, I don't know, the concourse, or it seemed like, and it goes all the way down into the net, and it's 4-2 at that point. But
and that was one of those ones, because Ryan Johnson clears it, and you couldn't really tell from the angle that it was going in, but all of a sudden the random like ushers or whoever were standing there watching, and they're just like, yes!
Yeah.
Which and they jump up before it's going in, and they're like, oh, it's going in.
Because you can see the line. And ironically, it was like his first goal that, of his career or of the year or something like that.
Yeah, well, he's a decently offensive defenseman. But
yeah, but he finally got one to go in on the most ridiculous goal. And so it ended up 4-2, and you just kind of get the inverse the day before. I don't think
I don't think Michigan was much worse than Minnesota. It was the story of special teams, really. I mean, Minnesota did a good job of keeping Michigan from really getting many looks on the power play, and Minnesota got a power play goal plus a goal shortly after a power play expired. So
yeah, I also think the transition, too, because Michigan in the first period had three or four chances where they had... You know, Power was in alone. You had another chance where I think it was Ciccolini had a nice cutback on a 2-on-1 that had a good chance. I mean, they had opportunities to score goals, and, you know, LaFontaine was pretty solid too. I think that was, you know, you've talked a little bit to me about LaFontaine and him being the recipient of pretty good defense around him and a good structure and system. But, you know, he also made a number of saves outside of that.
Yeah, he made some good saves. He will definitely. I mean, he's a good goaltender. There's no question about that. I don't know that he, is someone you're terrified about, but I would feel comfortable if I were a Minnesota fan.
Yep. In the end, it's 1-1 split, which is probably fair given the teams we've seen them this year and how they matched up all weekend. I think that both teams can walk away from that feeling pretty good about going into next weekend. Speaking of next weekend, you have requested to me that we take the next 40 minutes and talk about Ohio State hockey.
No, we don't have much to say about Ohio State. Well, let's introduce the bracket. Wisconsin got the one seed, which...
Because they won before Michigan's game even started on Saturday.
And Wisconsin, by the way, I mean, talk about quite a run down the stretch. I think they went 14-3-1 in their final 18 games. And I didn't think anyone was catching Minnesota, but... They proved to be a better team than Minnesota down the stretch, and with probably the Big Ten's two best players on their team in Holloway and Caulfield. Probably won't be there next year, but they are going to ride this out, and they got their first regular season title in 21 years, so shout out to the Badgers.
Do you think they're better than Minnesota?
I do, yes.
Would you rather face Minnesota?
Yes.
That's
having watched them, yeah.
That's interesting because I was thinking about that as, like, when Michigan locked into the three, I was like, all right, well, who do you want to face as the two in the semifinal? Not that you always get to pick, but, you know, you think about these things.
I mean, I don't think there's a big difference between them, but I think Wisconsin proved that they were the better team in sweeping Minnesota down the stretch and just firing on all cylinders. I mean, they're hot, and they've just got, you know, I really like Sampo Ranta. I like some of the, you know, Reedy and McLaughlin and all those guys. They're good, but... I mean, Holloway and Caulfield are going to be in the NHL very soon.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in a couple months.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point. Did you see Nate Wells's tweet about how Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin are all 4-4 against each other?
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting.
You know, it feels pretty correct to me.
Yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, I don't think Michigan is any worse than those two teams, but... Maybe Illinois fans will take solace in me saying this, but the regular season title, and this is why I don't care that much about the regular season title, frankly, because it doesn't always go to the team that's the best. Sometimes it goes to the team that is more consistent or got a better schedule, right? You know, really depends on the...
Well, normally the schedules the
quirks,
are the same.
The quirks of the season.
Okay.
And, you know, Michigan wasn't... I think maybe just as good as those other teams, but they weren't more consistent. Those teams were better at, you know, coming out and performing every night, and that's what winning a regular season title is about. It's not what winning a playoff championship is about.
Well, not in college.
Not really in the pros either.
I mean, you have to be consistent to win 4 out of 7 games.
4 out of 7 is barely above 500. If you need a 700 winning percentage to win a regular season...
We have to do it 3 or 4 times.
I'm just saying that winning... Being very good over 82 games is a lot harder than, you know, in terms of endurance and marathon than being good over 7 games. So
yeah, that's true.
Anyway, point is, Michigan just wasn't as consistently good as those teams. They had more letdowns, but in the postseason, you don't have to worry about that as much. And it's in every given game.
You can't have a letdown, though.
Well, sure. But, I mean, I think Michigan has done well to not have letdowns against good teams.
Yeah.
I think the issue has been the Ohio State and the Michigan State and the Penn State and those games that have haunted them.
I mean, they lost to Wisconsin 3-2, but that was a pretty tight
game. I mean, that, you know, if Michigan's season ends 3-2 to Wisconsin-like team in the NCAA tournament, you say, okay, that's the NCAA tournament. Like, I'm not, there's not going to be any issues with that to me.
No. No, those, I mean, it's, if it's a good team like that, it, it's, someone has to lose, right, as they say.
Only one team ends their season with a win.
Wisconsin wins. Minnesota's 2. Michigan, we discussed, is 3.
Yep.
That would mean Notre Dame, obviously, is 4. They handily beat Penn State twice this weekend, who played their first games in, I don't know,
since 1973.
Yeah, that's right. And so they, but they still finish 5, because even though Penn State misses half the season, Ohio State and Michigan State cannot catch up and in wins or winning percentage or pretty much anything at that point.
Yeah.
And because Wisconsin beat Michigan State on Saturday, that gave Ohio State the 6th seed.
Which is what we wanted.
Which is what we wanted, because that is going to be Michigan's first-round opponent, who we've seen 4 times, and 3 of those games were very similar.
All 4 games were similar. It's just in one game there was, you know, Ohio State didn't show us anything in that other game that they didn't in the other ones. It's, this team needs the puck to go through 7 bodies or off 3 legs or something.
Or Portillo to play every possible puck.
Yeah, I mean, they can't score against a good team unless they get a bunch of looks. Like, that's
right.
That's what we know about them.
Their numbers are, we'll just run through them quickly. They're 40th in Corsi, which is not great, because even this year, I think there's only 51 teams. Their power play is at 17%, which is okay-ish, not great. Their penalty kills at 77, which is about the same, not
great.
Not great. They have one skater that's averaging over more than, or at or above 0.75 points per game, which is Treylor, I believe.
Treylor.
And then Napier's been okay, and he...
The defense in front of him is just bad. I mean, this isn't a team like Michigan State where they can't buy a goal, but at least they suck the life out of the game so they can lose every game 2-0, where it's kind of close.
Except that one time against Michigan.
Yeah. Ohio State, just, they don't do... Like, we talked about this previously. They don't do anything well. There's no strengths to their team, and they just need it to be hockey to win, and sometimes...
Yeah. Napier's save percentage is at .905, which is not good. His GA is at 3.29. It's not terrible, but those aren't...
Yeah.
I mean, there's just nothing that you can look at across this team. Now, Michigan could lose to them, because...
Michigan's probably an 80 or 85% chance to win this game, but 15 to 20% chance events happen pretty frequently.
Or Westland scores with his butt or something like that, and And that's going to be the night game, where there are 3 games. Notre Dame, I believe, Penn State is the first game at noon, and then you're going to have
Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan State. Yep,
is the middle at 4 o'clock.
You know, maybe Michigan State. I mean, there's a chance they could beat Minnesota 1-0. You know, if Drew DeRitter has the game of his life and you know, a goal gets deflected in, like, that could happen.
We will be rooting for that.
We will. But don't think it's likely.
The interesting thing is, I was looking at the tournament, and I think that they don't reseed. So
what?
They don't reseed.
Oh, okay.
So if Michigan does beat, or I'm sorry, if Michigan State does beat Minnesota, they would face Michigan or Ohio State. Like, they wouldn't automatically go and play Wisconsin, which is how the Big Ten tournament has been in the past few years.
Well, that's a nice benefit.
In this case, it would benefit Michigan.
But you should probably expect Michigan will see Minnesota.
I would think
another
so.
Time.
Hopefully. I mean, as long as they don't get hockeyed, as we say. And then you have the semifinals on Monday night at 4:30 and 8:30.
4:30?
I think so.
Oh.
Yeah, it's. I think the late game is 8:30, so I think it's 4:30 and 8:30, and then I'm not sure. The championship's Tuesday night, 7:30, 8:30.
Probably best, 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
The best thing...
on a Tuesday. That would be peak Big Ten.
That would be peak Big Ten. The best thing, though, is that all these games are on BTN and not BTN Plus.
Yep.
Or a regional station. I think that's a lot of why they moved the tournament to this time, I think, is to get sort of all the eyeballs, because at that point, other than, well, they're going to, the Big Ten basketball tournament final is going to be during the second game. But I don't think Michigan State or Minnesota is likely to be there.
They had lots of replays of 2008 Iowa-Wisconsin football to get in, and so they had to move the tournament to fit in the schedule.
Have you watched many of those?
No, but that's what's always on BTN. If it's not a live event, it's a replay
of a random
game. Football game from 10 years ago.
Yeah. So, did you want to get into anything bracketologist-ness? Or?
Well, I mean, I'll just say one thing about the Big Ten tournament. I think that there are really four teams that I could probably see winning this. I mean, I could definitely see Notre Dame winning it. It wouldn't shock me.
Because they're not as Notre Dame as they have been.
Well, they also, Notre Dame in general does well in playoffs. I mean, they play a style that's geared to that sort of tight checking defensive.
Down.
I mean, they won the last two Big Ten tournaments that fully happened. So,
hooray. That's why is that how they got to host it? As if you win two in a row, you get to host it?
I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, it wouldn't shock me, but I don't think they're the favorite. I think any of the Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin teams winning it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you're going to get, if you win your first game, win two coin flips and you win the tournament.
Yeah.
But, you know, they probably won't because there's other teams there too. And so we'll see what happens. But should be interesting to watch. I'll say that.
Anything outside of the Big Ten that you wanted
to touch
on?
Well, all the tournaments are going on right now. And Selection Sunday will be the 21st of March.
Right. So that's the interesting thing is, you know, the Big Ten tournament was supposed to be in two weekends. At the same time as a lot of these other tournaments are ending, but the Big Ten now is going to have their tournament that's not even this weekend. It's the back half of this weekend and the beginning of next week.
Yeah.
So teams are going to have a week to kind of sit around and I guess watch the conclusion to the rest of the tournament.
But that's not super surprising. I mean, in the past years, I mean, when Michigan, you know, was in the tournament last 3 years ago now, they, you know, in 2018, they lost in the semifinals to Ohio State. The finals were the next weekend, and then they didn't play. So, like, there are plenty of teams that have to wait 2 weeks normally.
That's true. And I guess we'll have a podcast at some point next weekend that can not only will run down what happened in the Big Ten tournament, but then we will have one, I assume, the following weekend to hopefully talk about Michigan seeding.
I mean, again, I put a piece on the site last week about bracketology. There are other people that have speculated. It seems like there are 10 to 12-ish teams that are locked in. Michigan appears to be one of those teams. So, you know, unless the selection committee does something really weird, Michigan is probably in regardless of what happens this weekend. And it's just waiting to find out what obscure empty stadium you will be playing in.
What's their ceiling for seeding, though? I know you don't care
about
seeding.
It's probably a 2 or 3. I mean, that's...
But even if they win, if they beat... Let's say Minnesota and then Wisconsin.
I mean, Boston College and North Dakota feel locked into one seeds. Uh-huh. And then I still think Wisconsin and Minnesota, with their better general body of work, one of those two at least will get a one seed. And then they have to decide, do they give the last one to Minnesota State? I mean, Michigan, again, even if you win this, you get up to 17-9-1. I mean, it's...
That's not a one.
I feel like you maybe get the top two seed if you win the Big Ten.
Do you want Minnesota State as your one?
Probably, yeah.
Just because... You don't want to face...
Oh, because I'm skeptical of the WCHA in general.
And just loaded NHL teams in North Dakota who has...
And Boston College,
the entire Ottawa Senators, and I think the Avs have three players with the Eagles.
They very well might. I think that's probably your preference. What I'll say, if we go into the postseason, is I'm kind of happy that Michigan didn't have this, like, powerhouse regular season because
they lost two games.
The playoffs in the college hockey is just so cruel that, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not old like you, so I don't. You will have the memories.
How old am I? Do you even know?
You will have, you know, memories of being.
You don't even know.
A big time fan of 2008 and some of those teams, you know, that went 33-2 or something like that. To me, that just feels like so much pressure. Like, everything's gone right your entire season, and now it's one game. Whereas, like...
You don't remember Billy Sauer, do you?
No.
Whereas, I wonder if people on this podcast will.
Whereas, like...
We were all in Denver for that.
Like, you know, with this team, they've had a good season, and we'll get to, you know, we'll reflect on the season as it ends. But, you know, if they make a deep run, that'll be great. And if they lose early, it's like, okay...
Well, this isn't a team that you look at and you say, oh, this needs to be a national championship team. It's not that they can't win it, and it's not that they're not even don't have the talent or not good enough, but you look at their body of work throughout the regular season and you think, this seems like maybe a Frozen Four team, but probably maybe a win in the tournament, and that's kind of what they are.
Even if you're a number one seed, you're probably not going to make the Frozen Four. It's just how this tournament works, right? Statistically,
so stupid.
You only have, like, at best, like 40% odds. So
yeah,
for me, I just like it's all bets are off, and we'll see what happens. And I like, you know, playing with house money as opposed to sort of, you know, feeling like this is it.
I would like, maybe this is next year, but it would be fun to like have a rampaging season though, where you're walking, we're having this podcast
it would
on a
be.
Monday.
It just feels very empty, right? If you don't
No, it
convert.
Seems fun and enjoyable.
It's fun until then you get stabbed
well,
right at the
but
end.
But as we've gotten older, and I know, and clearly you don't because you're, what, 14, that you enjoy the ride. Like you enjoy, I was just talking to one of my friends about this and it like, you know, part of like with baseball is it's not all, I mean, yeah, you want to win the World Series and you want to play in the playoffs and stuff, but like part of enjoyment of baseball is you want your team to win 90 to 95 games because then they have a chance to win the division. And you, and it's not just hanging a banner. That's a big thing, but you know, through April, May, June, July, you want to win, you want to watch fun baseball. You want to watch your team win, you want to watch good baseball. And that's kind of like, this is like, you know, to have a good season for Michigan hockey where you're winning 20, 25 games is like, hey, that's a fun time. Like it's, you know, there were times this year when we got frustrated because like, hey, did you see that split again this weekend? Hey, remember when they like dropped a deuce in the last 2 minutes to Michigan State? Like, you know, it'd be fun to have a season like that. Michigan, the last couple times Michigan has made a run in the tournament, you know, they've kind of been making a run in the regular, at the end of the regular season to try to sneak in as a 3 or a 4 seed.
I mean, you could say that's kind of like this year. I mean, they're not sneaking in, but they've definitely
right.
been better in the
that's
second
what I mean.
Half, so.
But like, I mean, you know, having that Wisconsin type season or North Dakota where you're dominating your conference and yeah, it can be disappointing, but like it's also enjoyable for 4 or 5 months.
That is true. I'll also say that this
like
season...
Like basketball. Perfect example is basketball. Do you think, right now, just on record, do you think basketball is going to win the national title this year?
Well, they probably won't because
do you think they'll,
no even, team has more than 50% odds.
If,
so.
If Eli Brooks is healthy, do you think they make the Final Four?
Man, this is high stakes.
But my point is not...
Okay, so here's the thing.
No, but like... We've watched, even you and I, we've watched a bunch of basketball games together this year, and it's been fun getting together to watch that basketball team. And what I'm going to remember about this team in particular, unless they go on some magical run or lose on some half-court shot that goes off someone's head, is this was a fun team to watch for about 3 months.
Okay, now you're getting into the sentimental aspect of like why sports are a thing.
Well, I'm getting old. That's what we do.
I mean, yes, in the basic sense, then sports is really about the small moments in between. But what I will say is that, I mean, with basketball, no one expected the season to go this way. So I'm in this
right.
house money position. Whereas
that's true.
It is this, I mean, I remember the years where the Tigers were World Series or bust. It's a stressful thing to be like, you got to win it all. And like, I mean, I remember in 2013, 2014, you'd sit around and like, yeah, the summers were fun. And those are the great memories you take away from it. But really at the time, it felt like, none of this matters. We're going to win the AL Central, and our season will come down to 3 or 4 or 7 games in October. Like, what are we even doing this for?
I guess I just haven't been a fan of many teams where I've just known we're going to win the division.
Yeah, it's not, I mean...
It sounds fun. It sounds more fun than, oh God, I hope we don't collapse in June. Because that's happened.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's I will say that it's crazy to me how fast this season has gone by. I mean, I feel like...
Especially given a pause.
I feel like we were doing the season preview... Two weeks ago.
Maybe you've just enjoyed the company.
I am also having flashbacks about we're now back to square zero, right? Like, we're back to the beginning. I mean,
season doesn't matter. We're
the Big
make
Ten
tournament
was the Big Ten tournament was going on a year ago. I mean, right when COVID happened.
Oh yeah,
we were gearing up to play Ohio State in the semifinals of the Big Ten,
and that was
so
probably a winner take all game.
Yeah, so this is we're back to the beginning, and like now that the spring weather has hit, I'm remembering all of like. The you know the beginning of quarantine and like everyone being locked in the house.
You're not even
and,
wearing a jacket.
Well, yeah, I remember going out on bike rides and things like that, okay. But you couldn't you know, like you know go to the grocery store was out of paper towel or whatever and the hand sanitizer.
Oh yeah,
all these memories are coming back and it's just an avalanche.
I root for the avalanche. Is that? I think this podcast is probably over.
That was an entertaining ending, though.
It was a good ending.
It got kind of philosophical.
It did, and it got sentimental, which is a good thing. So I hope you stuck around for all of it.
listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.16. For Alex Drain and David Nasternak, come back next week where we'll be toasting a Big Ten tournament title. Or we won't. I did a wine tasting, by the way, last summer, right?
You're the oldest person I know.
No, so my mother likes to go wine tasting, like, as a family event.
As a family event? Your brother can't even drink.
Well, no, I mean, like, mostly, like, my cousins and, like, my aunts and stuff
So extended family?
Yeah. So, anyway, she had bought a wine tasting event through the Ypsilanti Meals on Wheels auction, but then COVID happened, so the wine tasting became virtual.
That's not a thing. You can't taste wine virtually.
So they send you a huge crate of wine, and it's these little, I mean, they're like shot glasses of wine, basically.
Okay.
And so then you have to then take them out yourself, and then the wine person from the winery comes on the Zoom, and then it's like, okay, now we're doing this sample, now we're doing this sample. Anyway, wine people infuriate me. And that was my takeaway.
How do you define a wine person?
People that are really into wine. Like, not just that casually drink it, but, like, are really, like, go to wine tasting events,
like
go to wineries.
Like a wine snob?
Yeah, like people that buy, you know, wine for, like, $1,000.
But you don't like snobs anyway.
So, you're doing this wine tasting event, okay, right? And it's just like, okay, this one, they're not even speaking English. I mean, it's like, this has a slight tint of smoky taste, and you can really feel the aged cedar in the, and you're just like, what the f*** are you talking about?
Do you smell the cork? Aren't you supposed to smell the cork?
I imagine this is how Brian and some of the MGoBlog people are about craft beer or whatever.